and welcome to this week's Ukraine Calling program. I'm Oksana Smerechuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. We'll have a roundup of the weekly news for you, some culture and some music. We're bringing you a feature interview with art historian James Rubin, a leading expert on Impressionism, about an undiscovered Ukrainian Impressionist painter, Mikhailo Tkachenko. But first, as always, the news. On November the 8th, Ukraine's Cabinet of Ministers approved a draft law that is aimed at reducing pressure on businesses. The Business Pressure Relief Law is meant to prevent law enforcement bodies and police from abusing their powers. The draft law's stipulations include that lawyers be present at police searches, that government officials video record police searches, and there are also restrictions as to when officers can seize computer hardware. This step was applauded by representatives of the international business community in Kyiv as moving in the right direction in order to build investor confidence in Ukraine. The draft law still needs to be submitted to Parliament for approval before coming into effect. Protesters who were gathered outside the Ukrainian Parliament and blocking the road since October the 17th are continuing their protest. The sizes of the crowd is estimated by police to be around 500, but can increase up to 1,000 people during rallies. There continue to be representatives of a number of political parties who are organizing, such as Rukh Novekh Sil, which is Mikhail Saakashvili's party, Batyushchina, Pravi Sektor, Samopomich and Svoboda, and others. According to organizers, there are three main demands: to lift the immunity from persecution for lawmakers, to create an anti-corruption court, and to change the electoral law. The parliament may have been listening to the demands since on November the 7th, they did pass a draft law on elections. The Armed Services Committees of the United States House and Senate have approved the National Defense Authorization Act for the fiscal year 2018. This will provide $350 million in military aid to Ukraine, including defensive lethal weapons. This aid, however, is contingent on certain reforms in the defense sector. According to the committees, Ukraine still needs to take substantial action to make defense institutional reforms, according to documents. The principal deputy chief monitor for the OSCE monitoring mission, Alexander Hoog, said on November the 8th that monitors have been registering a constant increase in the number of ceasefire violations since the harvest ceasefire that was announced in early autumn. In particular, Hoog said that the average number of violations per week has increased from 40 to 220 incidents. And conflict during the last week on the front line also fit this pattern. There was shelling by pro-Russian forces, which reportedly damaged a chlorine gas tank at the Donetsk water filtering plant. This created the risk of highly poisonous chlorine gas being released into the air. The U.S. Department of State reacted to this on November the 7th by calling on pro-Russian forces to adhere to the ceasefire agreements and the Minsk Accords. On November the 8th, two Ukrainian servicemen, Anton Mishko and Valentin Nechvedyuk, were killed in Luhansk region while fighting to stop a subversive group of pro-Russian forces. In total, over the last week, three Ukrainian servicemen were killed and 13 were wounded. The day after their release from imprisonment in Crimea on November the 26th, Crimean Tatar leaders Ilmi Umerov and Artem Chigoz met with Turkish President Recep Erdogan. They thanked him for helping to negotiate their release and asked him to advocate for other prisoners. The two deputy heads of the Crimean Tatar Metalis emphasized that there still are 40 people held prisoner and 16 Crimeans kidnapped by the Russian Federation. They said that Ukrainian filmmaker Oleg Sentsov, sentenced to 20 years in Russian prisons, should be the first priority for release. They received assurances from the Turkish president that he would continue advocating for the release of political prisoners from Crimea. On November the 7th, President Poroshenko signed a law by which performers from Russia can only travel to perform in Ukraine once they have a clearance from the Ukrainian Security Service. This law is seen as one of a continuum of measures to protect Ukraine's national information and cultural space. It bans promotion of separatism and of communist and Nazi totalitarian ideas and of their symbols during tours in Ukraine. It also forbids tours that promote the aggressor state. And the Ukrainian parliament has voted to give a boost to Ukrainian domestic filmmaking. On the 9th of November, the Verkhovna Rada voted to exempt film producers in Ukraine from the VAT, value-added tax. Through this amendment to the Customs and Tax Code, film producers would have an exemption from paying this tax for the next 5 years. It builds on legislation passed in March 2017, namely on state support for cinematography and on the Ukrainian Cultural Fund. There has been a steady growth in the number of Ukrainian-produced films shown in cinemas in Ukraine in the past 6 years, with 35 domestic films released or still planned for release in 2017. And now for our feature interview. Bohdan Mihailo speaks to art historian James Rubin about the lost Ukrainian impressionist Mikhailo Tkachenko.
Well, I'm very honored and pleased to have as our guest today on Ukraine Calling, James Rubin, who is a foremost authority on the Impressionists. And listeners will soon discover that among the most famous Impressionists, there was a figure from Ukraine, not known until now, Mikhailo Tkachenko from Kharkiv, that has attracted the attention of this leading expert on Impressionism and has drawn him even to Ukraine. So James Rubin, I won't call you Professor Doctor because we have a very informal approach. Welcome to our program. Welcome to Ukraine.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed my stay a great deal and I have learned a great deal as well.
So again, in a little bit more detail, what has drawn you to Ukraine? Tkachenko, but is he that good? Is he that interesting that a person of your stature has come to see his works, the real works, not just the pictures of them?
Of course. That's a perfectly legitimate question. It turns out that Tkachenko was not unknown in the Paris art world of his time.
Which is 1890s?
He went to Paris, I can back up a bit. He was born, I believe he was born in Kharkiv, and he studied for a little while in Kharkiv, but he was good enough to be admitted to the St. Petersburg Academy. In fact, he was so good that with a landscape, which is in the museum in Lviv, a large, luminous painting, but not yet in an Impressionist style, he won a scholarship to travel to France, to Paris. Paris was, of course, and had been since the 18th century, more or less, if not even earlier, the center of the art world, of the Western art world, with its great academy and the Louvre, which was at first the royal collection. Of course, it became the national collection after the French Revolution. And in the middle of the 19th century, Paris was the most modern city, I think probably one could say, on Earth, because of the urban renovations and so forth, and the various political back and forth, and the wide reach of the of French artists. It was the art capital of the world. And so whether Impressionism or not, Tkachenko received this scholarship to Paris. He arrived in Paris in 1888, and from that point on, he seems to have picked up what I call the Impressionist vision, which was a new way of painting, contrary to his own academic training. He was an artist of great skill, and so very successfully transitioned to the Impressionist style, and he even won some gold medals at Parisian exhibitions.
And I'm struck by the fact that the themes of both of those works that won the medals, one was about Poltava and one is called Scene of Ukraine or something like that. They had a Ukrainian content.
Yes, they had a Ukrainian context. And I think the reason that he did that, even in Paris, was because Impressionism was very much about painting the world that one knows. And clearly for Kachenko, Ukraine was a place that he knew and a place that he held very close to his heart.
Well, let's just remind or tell our listeners that, because they may be a little bit confused, you saw a major work of his in Lviv, but of course that arrived in Lviv later, because Lviv at that time was under Austria-Hungary, but he was actually working in the Russian Empire.
Yes. While in Paris, he was not only part of the Parisian art world, but he was part of an expatriate community in which, of course, Russians, Ukrainians, and I suppose other Eastern Europeans and other nations or provinces or states under the Russian Empire, and speaking a common or related languages, he was part of that expatriate community. In that community were some painters who were working for the Russian Navy, doing naval scenes, doing portraits of important military and cargo and other ships related to Russian sea power. And through his friends, he was received some commissions to do paintings of that sort, and he eventually worked for the Russian Navy. And so, in a sense, there were two sides to his career, at least this early part of his career, where he could earn a living working for the Russian Navy, but also repeatedly return to Ukraine and paint Ukrainian scenes and do them in the more progressive, the novel style he learned from the Impressionists. In other words, an Impressionist style. He brought Impressionism to Ukraine. He brought this vision with him. And I think that he was one of those major artists who facilitated the spread of Impressionism, which became almost, you could say, a world style by the very end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century.
In your presentation or lecture that you gave here in Kyiv a few nights ago, you mentioned that the Russian Tsar gave as a present to the French president two of his works when he visited Paris.
Yes.
So he must have been good.
Yes, he was good. And as I mentioned, I think he won gold medals. And these were, of course, French judges judging his work. And one article that we've discovered in one
Figaro.
Of the top newspapers, yes, Le Figaro, mentioned him as one of the best impressionists of the day.
So why don't we know about him? Why are we just discovering him now?
That's an excellent question, and it's really fascinating. I think that if he had stayed in Paris and, you know, made it the center of his career, he would not have been forgotten. He would have maintained a presence. But for historical and economic reasons, plus, of course, his love for his home country, he did not make Paris the center of his career. And he spent a great deal of time in Ukraine, painting scenes of Ukraine. And for historical reasons, which I think everyone can understand, for one thing, the dominance of French art and French culture, but also the situation of Eastern Europe nations and regions at the time, he more or less disappeared from view.
Of course, the Soviets didn't appreciate this decadent type of art when they came to Pound 17. And he died just before the revolution,
I understand.
He died
in 1916, yes.
And how old was he?
I think he was 56,
so
something
a young
like
man.
That. He was not an old man. And from the evidence I've seen of the quality of his painting, he was at the peak of his career.
Mm-hmm. Do we know if he knew any of other famous painters in the Russian Empire at that time? I mean, for example, Ivazovsky's Sea pictures. Do we know if he was in the same group or crowd at that time?
That's an excellent question, and I have to explain to you that I am here as a student, and I have been attracted by Kachenko's work, but since I do not read Ukrainian or Russian, I am not able to do the research necessary, except when it's in French, of course, French newspapers, or in the English language. And so this is an area that I must learn more about. For example, there is a correspondence. And of course, this is a handwritten correspondence. And so I need Ukrainian assistance and translators in order to find out what is in that correspondence. I know, by the way, that there are some very distinguished scholars who have worked on Kachenko. And by no means am I interested in duplicating their work. What I am interested in is bringing him to light, to Western eyes, confirming, of course, to Ukrainian eyes, because I've learned that there are many Ukrainians who are not very much aware of his work. Of course, specialists are, but the general public does not seem to be widely aware of, or even proud as they should be, of his accomplishments.
I'm speaking to James Rubin, a leading authority on French art of the late 19th century, second half of the 19th century, because it's not just the Impressionists, but Courbet, I notice, and others, but primarily on the Impressionists, and he has a very celebrated work, or works on Manet, for example, and others. James, you mentioned this European aspect. It's interesting that he's being rediscovered, Mikhailo Tkachenko, just at a time when Ukraine is returning to Europe, when it's reaffirming its connection with Europe. So it's very timely that you're doing this research and helping us here and in the diaspora to recognize people that perhaps were not on the radar screen for political reasons.
Yes, I think you're very right about that. And my motivation is... Well, let me begin by saying that there's a personal element. My grandfather came from Kiev. And so the name Kiev and the name Ukraine have always had an echo in my mind. Of course, it took a lot more than that. It took meeting someone, Mr. Batesy Toms, to whom I'm extremely grateful, who set up a law practice in Kiev many years ago, and who himself has taken a great interest in Ukrainian history and Ukrainian culture. We have known each other for years, and he asked me about Kachenko. He learned about Kachenko, I think, through a gallery in Kiev. And he was struck by Kachenko's work. And so he told me about him, and he invited me to come to Kiev to see some of his works.
And Bate is also the head of the British-Ukrainian Chamber of Commerce, which, as I understand, has helped or sponsored or supported your visit.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's absolutely pertinent to give them appropriate credit. And the Chamber of Commerce is not devoted solely to commerce either, because commerce and culture go together. And the cultural element, I think, is something that can be quite favorable to Western impressions, no pun intended, of Ukraine. And at a time like this, where people, you know, I don't know if I should say this, but people said to me, "Will you be safe?" Well, having already
been we have a war going on still,
yes,
with our eastern neighbor.
But for one thing, it's a very big country. And secondly, I absolutely trust the people whom I know in Ukraine to know whether it's safe or not. But my point really is that the reputation of Ukraine deserves to be much bigger than a single specific political problem. And that's where I hope I can make a contribution.
Thank you. That's for your interest and involvement. And of course, there are a few figures already from Ukraine that have become well known on as artists. Arkhipenko, for example, I suppose, is the most famous one.
Did you know that Malevich was Ukrainian? And I'm told by a friend of mine who is an expert on Malevich that he always felt very close to Ukraine.
Yes. Okay. Now, about the country itself. You're here for the first time.
No.
Sorry.
This is my second trip.
Okay.
Yes.
But you've just engaged this week in a sort of whirlwind tour, or shall we say visit, to three major centers, Lviv, Kyiv, and you've just come back yesterday or last night from Kharkiv. What are your impressions? Obviously, you were there for a short time, but first impressions that you would share with our audience.
I think it's a country that has extraordinary potential and energy. All three are grand cities. They are each different, but each is very impressive.
And there's quite a contrast between Kharkiv, Kyiv, and Austro-Hungarian Lviv.
Lviv, yes, 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 of course. And each has its own its own individual characteristics.
Okay, we have to conclude. Time is running out. It's a fascinating discussion. I just want to tell our audience that the latest issue of What's On in Kyiv has a lead article on the restoration of Ukrainian Impressionism, where it, of course, mentions and refers to James Rubin. James, you've taught at Harvard, you've taught at Boston, you've published so many works and books. And yet you are a very, I would say, humble figure. You don't come across as the typical academic that is so full of himself. And I was very struck by the fact that at your lecture, you present fairly complex themes in a very down-to-earth manner, which is immediately intelligible to the audience. So in your kind of concluding remarks, what is your overall impression, again, no pun intended, as you would say, after you've seen the real works of Tkachenko, you've seen a bit of Ukraine, and are you coming away inspired, ready to write something about him, ready to contribute to the organization of an exhibition?
Yes, very much so. Having now seen a considerable number of works by Tkachenko, I believe that he's an artist of the very highest quality, and that he certainly deserves to be rediscovered and to be admired, not just by Ukrainians, but by Westerners in general, to enhance, for one thing, their understanding of a sort of European cultural phenomenon that's not limited by borders. I'm ready to contribute what I can, limited by my limited language skills. And so my feeling is that I will, as I learn more, of course, I will be able to write in greater detail. But I think primarily my role will be, let's say, supervisory and introductory. I cannot speak with an authentic Ukrainian voice. I hope that I will find collaborators who can do that. I have already met people in the museums who are wonderful and welcoming and with whom I am anxious to cooperate.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to James Rubin, leading art historian, author, teacher, and now it seems not only somebody who has
the
helped us to rediscover
Mikhail Tkachenko,
but a friend of Ukraine.
We'll be holding an interactive intellectual event.
Thank you very much, James.
Thank you. It's
November
been a pleasure.
On Saturday, November the 11th, called What Language Did Nestor Use When Speaking with the Kievites? Now, by the way, Nestor was an 11th century monk who is reputed to be the author of the Primary Chronicles, which is the earliest East Slavonic chronicle. This event will be held in the Museum of History of Ukraine in Kyiv, starting at 4 p.m. Historians, linguists, and musicians will lead a discussion and entertain the audience. And the event is organized by the Kyiv branch of the Prosvita Society, Likbez, Istorichny Front, and the National Museum of History of Ukraine, and is being held to mark Ukrainian Language and Literacy Day. There's a new band in Lviv called Divni, The Strange Ones. They just released a song called Яко падає листя, which means When the Leaves Fall. Enjoy.
Осінь листок упав, упав. До ніхто їх підлетів, тихо і тихо припав. Ти стоїш тут ясна, світла неначе весна. А знаєш, яко падає, а знаєш, яко падає. Небо сонце сія, сонце сія. Це любов, ручка твоя, ручка маленька твоя, усміх чистий. Я твій, а знаєш, яко падає, а знаєш, яко падає, а знаєш, як опадає листя.
Next week, Bohdan Mihailo will be hosting the show and will be back with even more news, culture and music. So tune in again for a new edition of Ukraine Calling. We would be happy to receive any feedback from you. You can write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Oksana Smirichuk in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.